Chapter 3 of The Art of War examines different types of strategies. Sun Tzu believes the best strategy, based on sufficient knowledge about both sides, preempts the opponent's moves and secures victory without raising a sword. On the tactical level, if it really comes down to physical confrontation, the commander is to choose from a range of maneuvers, ranging from encirclement to engagement or evasion, depending on the balance of power. From our earlier episodes, we have followed Sun Tzu's formula as he calculated the tremendous human, logistic, and socio-economic cost of wars. So by now, it is a lot easier for us to appreciate Sun Tzu's rating of various military strategies. In his opinion, to subdue an enemy state while keeping it intact is superior to burning cities to ashes. To defeat a whole army without breaking it up is better than to crush every last remnant of resistance. To fight and win 100 battles is not a testament to true military prowess. The best strategist defeats the enemy without getting blood on his hand. This series of counterintuitive arguments must be appreciated in light of Sun Tzu's recommended ways of war. There are many ways to fight a war. Sun Tzu believed the best approach is to go after the enemy's strategy and defuse their initiative to fight. The second best course of action is to work for a diplomatic victory. Physical confrontation is fine in the absence of smarter solutions. But siege warfare should only be the last resort, as it is both time-consuming and likely to cause large number of casualties. And if enemy reinforcements arrive, a protracted siege could easily turn inside out. The diplomatic and military means to victory are pretty straightforward, but what exactly did Sun Tzu mean by going after the opponent's strategy? His contemporaries in the 6th to 5th century BCE provided a good example. The king of Jin was secretly plotting against the state of Qi. Before launching an attack, he sent his advisor, Fan Zhao, as an emissary to the state of Qi to find out whether Qi was going to be an easy target. The king of Qi, unaware of Jin's intention, arranged a warm reception to entertain his state guest. During the feast, when everybody got a little tipsy, Fan Zhao asked to drink from the king of Qi's chalice. The king gladly shared his drinking vessel. But as Fan Zhao finished the round and returned the chalice, an official of Qi, Yan Ying, demanded a new one be served to his king. Fan Zhao was not happy about this, but still he proposed to dance in the court and demanded to be accompanied by the Zhou Empress music. The court musician flatly denied and said he didn't know the exclusive music of the imperial repertoire. After the banquet, the king of Qi questioned Yan Ying and the court musician for their acts of inhospitality. Yan Ying explained, "I know Fan Zhao has received adequate education in propriety, but when he asked to drink from a king's chalice, he went out of his way to challenge the rules of hierarchy, and we shouldn't brook such provocation at our court." The musician said, "The imperial music belongs to the emperor's court and is not to be wantonly played for an insignificant official such as Fan Zhao. That's why I turned down his request." Meanwhile, in his report to the king of Jin, Fan Zhao said, "Perhaps now is not the right moment to attack the state of Qi after all, as propriety still prevails at his court and there are wise officials on the watch." In the modern day, hierarchy and propriety no longer carry as much weight as they used to. Britain's Prime Minister, Theresa May, often drops a deep curtsy to members of the royal family. We learn about this because social media users make a huge fuss about it. Many of these protesters probably are not against the greeting posture per se, but don't much appreciate her going down the extra inches. A few thousand years ago, in the spring and autumn period in China, any deviation from the standard norms at the court, such as misusing some items or service not befitting one's title, was worth more than a huge fuss. In the story about the officials of the state of Qi, they foiled the enemy's plot by standing up to uncourteous behavior, thereby demonstrating their competence. Thus, the potential enemy's conspiracy was nipped in the bud, a war was averted, and its huge cost otherwise evaded. Note that the King of Qi, who hosted the foreign spy, failed to grasp what really went on during the reception. As we mentioned in earlier episodes, not everybody was suited to oversee the military affairs, least of all the hereditary kings of noble pedigrees. In fact, here in this chapter, Sun Zi stressed that a king who interferes in military affairs without really knowing what he's doing would only spread confusion and chaos in the ranks. So Sun Zi once again made the point that command should be entrusted to competent people like him, who knew how to fight a winning war. He said, "A competent general is the bulwark of a state. When he's prudent, the state grows stronger. When he becomes negligent, the state is weakened." We've already gone through Sun Zi's criteria for the selection of commanders in pre-war council meetings. The first chapter of The Art of War listed the qualities of ideal commanders. In this chapter, however, Sun Zi turned to the finer points, those being the more attainable virtue of knowledge. In order to choose from an arsenal of strategies, a commander must know his odds of winning, and there are chiefly five things to know. The side that knows when to strike and when to fall back will win. The side that adapts its war plans according to the size of the armies will win. The side that inspires a unity of purpose through the troops will win. The side that is more prepared will win. The side with a capable commander unhindered by his monarch will win. In short, a commander who can calculate the balance of power between the opposing sides and take appropriate actions stands a good chance of victory. On the tactical level, Sun Zi's suggestion is to encircle the enemy when in a majority of 10 to 1, and to initiate attack with an advantage of 5 to 1. Efforts must be made to scatter the enemy's forces even as we have twice as much strength. But once the balance is tipped in the enemy's favor, retreat and evasion are in order. A small force insistent on taking on a big rival would only end up in captivity. So, a huge part of military command, in Sun Zi's opinion, is about knowing enough about both sides. And then, on that basis, the strategist must set out to create a scenario to eliminate uncertainties and secure a certain victory. I believe we have covered enough about the knowing in this one. Come next episode, we'll see how Sun Zi proposed building an invincible position.